69ing, never worth it.
It takes a lot of logistics.
And like, why am I expected to do labor while I'm experiencing pleasure?
Yeah.
This is my time to chill and relax.
And no one is getting the best of either thing that's happening.
Let me enjoy me and then you enjoy you separately after the fact.
Right. We're each blowing each other at like 40 to 60% at any given time. 69
is like, this is what productivity culture has done to orgasms is the 69.
Nobody enjoys like slow sex anymore. Everybody's trying
to... We gotta do two for one?
Everybody's trying to optimize sex these days with 69ing.
I take my turn, then you take yours.
Yeah. Let's take our time with it, why don't we?
But sometimes it takes 169s to realize that.
There could be 169s in a room.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. We're having a song party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for heart-to-hearts and hot gossip, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, joined by my beautiful co-host. Over in the cuck chair, we have Meg Ruoco.
Someone call the provost, because it's me, the co-host.
Because it's me. Hello, it's me.
Sometimes when I do those intros, I feel like the narrator in Powerpuff Girls, mm-hmm. where he's like, the city of Townsville. That's kind of how I feel announcing myself as the co-host.
No, this is,
and that's good.
That's how it should feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm watching Girls for the first time right now.
This is such a beautiful journey you're on.
It's all I can think about. I just look forward to the end of the day when I get to sit in this very spot and watch a couple episodes. I binged like all of season one when I was on a plane, and then it took me, all of season one. It was when I was flying from London to Tampa.
Oh.
And so they had all of season one. So I was like, I guess I'm going to watch it.
That's a crazy place to watch all of season one.
And so once I came back from all the traveling in June, it took me a second to get back into it. Now I'm like midway through season three. Mm-hmm. So I'm like kind of at the halfway point.
Yeah.
And I've started to ask myself, as I know that many other people ask themselves, like, which girl do I resonate with the most?
Yeah.
And I haven't really indulged in what the cultural conversation around this is, mm-hmm. or like what people's greater opinions on like who constitutes as being like which girl archetype.
Yeah.
I know that you've watched Girls.
I've watched Girls.
Interested to hear your perspective.
Yes.
But I, based on where I am now in the show and my perception of the characters, I feel that I am a true mix.
Interesting. Okay, of who?
Between Marnie and Hannah.
Yep. Totally understand that. I totally see that.
And sometimes I connect with Shoshana.
Yeah.
I rarely connect with Jessa.
Oh, yeah. No.
But I feel that I am like a true mix between Marnie and Hannah.
Yeah.
And I could call out all the specific reasons why.
And I would love for you to do that right now.
Wait, who would your answer be?
Well, here's what's tough is because I never really thought about it too much when I was watching Girls because I was like, I don't actually know if I would like to think about which type of, which girl I am. I took the quiz and I believe that I was like 78% Marnie.
Okay.
Which I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Like, we're all going to hate a girl for, you know, expressing herself creatively or whatever the
Completely.
Fuck.
I saw that episode like two nights ago.
I mean, it's an incredible, it's an incredible, every episode you're just like, wow, it really gives context as to why people just kind of let Lena Dunham do whatever the fuck she wants. Cause it's like, well, you made Girls.
Totally. Brilliant mind on that woman.
So really brilliant mind on that woman. But honestly, I think I might be a mix between Marnie and Shosh, I feel like. Because I do feel like there is a part of me that, like, when Shosh kind of crashes out and she's just like, she's like, okay, everybody fuck off. And then she, like, kind of like leaves and or like removes herself. Mm. I'm like, that is a bit of me.
Yeah.
To be like, okay, enough. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Yeah.
Like, I do do that.
The first two seasons, I didn't feel that I connected with the Shoshana at all. But yeah. Over the last couple episodes, I've been like, oh no.
Yeah.
Now I kind of fuck with her too.
I fuck with Shosh a lot. She ended up being maybe the character at the end, not that I liked the most, but I think who was the most likable character for me anyway. But yeah, I think Marnie and Shosh, I am the mix.
What do most people say? Do you
about
know?
Me?
Or like in general?
Or
like
that they are.
Who's the girl that most people want to be?
I think most people want to be Shosh.
Really?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I do think that most people want to be Shosh.
Interesting.
Shout out in the comments if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Like, because I feel like I had heard discourse before, back when this meant nothing to me, so I didn't internalize any of it.
Right.
About like everybody thinking that they are one character, or that's the character that people want to be, but in reality they are something else.
Yeah.
I assumed that character was Jessa.
No, I think people find Jessa to be pretty insufferable.
Well, so do I.
Right.
Okay,
I think most people don't want to be Marnie.
But
But I think a lot of people are.
Get real,
and
mama.
You know what?
I get it. Everyone hates on the type A bitch.
You know who's kind of like tethered to Marnie? Sheena.
Well,
and she is putting herself out there creatively.
And listen.
Listen.
This is why I also fuck with Sheena Shea.
Yeah, come on. You're putting yourself out there creatively.
Out there. I do love a woman who's unafraid to be cringe.
Yeah, and that's like pretty much all that Marnie is. And I also think that Hannah is kind of everybody's like shadow self.
Yeah.
Like, but just portrayed as like a person.
For sure.
Which I really admire.
I love her like freedom.
Oh yes.
Like she just has such a unfiltered sense of self that I love.
Yes. And I think that maybe that so many people like their hackles go up when they think about like if they are like these characters, because all of these characters are cringy or embarrassing.
They're
or
all
horrible.
Imperfect people.
Yes, in some way. And also, I think it's like a really important reflection.
That's also
of,
like the human experience.
Yes.
Like, yeah, we do relate to these.
Yes.
To these girls.
And it's like kind of a time capsule in a way where like it's all of these girls who are in, you know, the like 2010s who are figuring themselves out. I love the costuming on that show, that Hannah is always wearing some outfit that doesn't quite fit her right.
I know. I was just reading some interview that Lena Dunham did about that.
Yeah. The costuming is incredible. I agree. I love that. Like, I honestly love that she's like naked a lot of the time and that there's just this like unapologetic, like this is my body and I'm not trying to do anything with it. It's just here.
Right.
It really is like a revolutionary show.
Yeah, my like only knowledge of girls going into this was just that I've seen all the clips of people talking about like what girl they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And I picked up on the fact that people didn't want to be Hannah.
Yep. Nobody wants to be Hannah.
But a lot of people did want to be, and I forgot which one it was.
Uh-huh.
But I remembered that nobody wanted to be Hannah. I'll be Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be Hannah.
Yeah. I think like, the thing is I think everyone is Hannah to an extent. That's what's so good about the show.
Totally.
It's so, so good. And I think the way that Lena Dunham specifically delivers lines, it's in a way where you are like, wow, no one has ever spoken that string of words ever before. You're the first person to do it. And it is coming to you so naturally that I know you have thought this for
totally
years, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also like, I really love people who, and this is like a character trait that I've always admired in others.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that I embodied this more, honestly, but I love people that just say the first thing that's on their mind.
Yeah.
And they don't like overly manicure themselves or like worry about like saying everything exactly the right way.
Right.
And Hannah's character doesn't have an ounce of that in her body.
No.
Hannah's character says the first thing that comes to her brain to like her own detriment.
Yes.
It's like so far in that direction.
Yes.
But it's a trait that I still admire. Like even when people are like, they probably should think before they speak more, I still love when people are like that, particularly if they carry that trait and they also carry the ability to like course correct without becoming too hard on themselves and just be like, oh, my bad, and then move on with it. I love those people.
Yeah.
I just appreciate someone who is unafraid to be wrong.
Yeah.
There's really some, there's so much beauty in that to me.
And there's a beauty to Hannah's character too, in that when she speaks, she never thinks she's wrong.
Yeah. I love it.
That's like what's so beautiful too, that she's like, she doesn't even consider it to be like, oh, should I censor myself? She's right. Like, well, obviously
she doesn't have it at all.
This.
That, yeah. And that to me is like, that's an admirable quality to me.
Yeah.
It's imperfect, but I love people that are just so unapologetic. They don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
They just are so themselves that they can't help but to speak the first sentence that enters their frame.
Yeah, I agree. And I really love watching shows about like women hanging out in New York.
Yeah.
Like I really loved watching Sex and the City before watching Girls, before watching Broad City. Mm-hmm. I just started watching Broad City all the way through for the first time. And like that entire show is about women hanging out. And it's really fascinating to watch these groups of women at different points in time, specifically in New York.
Yeah.
And the tones of each show and how the pendulum kind of swings with that. Like Sex and the City was very like optimistic. It's very lighthearted and kind of like frothy and fun. Girls feels a lot more intense. The stakes feel way higher. Mm-hmm. They're coming out of like the 2008 economic depression.
Yeah.
And there is this like grittiness to it. There is no, it's no martinis after work. It's like everyone is jobless and everything in their lives are broken.
Yeah.
And then like Broad City is like, yeah, everyone, they're still poor, but there's kind of this like hope in the air when it's, when they start the show, because like Obama is president and everyone's really excited about that. And there's this kind of like feminism element to it. And then as the show goes on and like when Trump gets elected, the kind of like downturn of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It just is really, it's like a fascinating study of the city and also women in response to like their social set of circumstances around them.
Yeah.
And I just love watching every single one of these shows so much. It is so, it feels like almost anthropological to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And at times I do feel like I'm in an episode of Sex and the City. And at times I do feel like I'm in an episode of Girls. And at times I do feel like I'm in Broad City.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I'm commuting anywhere, I'm in an episode of Broad City.
I've never seen Sex and the City or Broad City.
Oh my God, Maddie, you're in for such a treat. You're in for such a treat. Sex and the City, I mean, obviously there are parts of it that are absolutely dated and you're like, whoa, that was weirdly transphobic, you know? But Sex and the City is, I mean, another just absolutely phenomenal show and so poignant, and it still feels really accessible even now, like 30 years later. And Broad City, I mean, again, I'm like, I'm holding off watching the last episode because I'm sad. I don't want it to be over. Broad City is, it's really sweet. And it's also, I think in a way also like unflinching about what it is to kind of like be a woman in New York. In similar ways that Girls is. With this added element of like kind of comedic magical realism that captures what I feel is kind of how it feels to live in New York.
Interesting.
That the city is like magic in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that they capture that really well. I started watching Broad City when I think I was too young, because I started watching it and I was like, why can these women never get anything done? And I was like, it nothing ever happens in any episode, because everything always gets derailed. But I like really appreciate that now.
Yeah.
Especially having lived in New York, that like one of the very first episodes is Abby, one of the main characters, has to get a package that her neighbor asked her to receive because he was out of the apartment that day. and she missed the person delivering it, so she has to go to the, like, the pickup depot.
Oh,
and
I've had
like,
to do that before.
Me too, a million times. And she like takes a like a train to like a bus to a ferry, and
it's like always the most inconvenient place to get to.
She like ends up on like a giant a deserted island. Yeah.
That's
and it's
how
like,
it feels.
It's like a woman just sitting in a chair, and she's like, "Do you have your slip?" Like it's like.
That is actually the experience, though.
Exactly.
Like, I remember when I had to go pick up a package in the middle of fucking nowhere. Mm-hmm. It was like probably, I think it was like in deep Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're getting there, it's like a big parking lot surrounded by like a barbed wire fence.
It's so scary.
And it's like, it looks like a meat, like processing factory. Like it's the weirdest looking building.
It's
there's like
so scary.
One way in, and then you walk in there, and there's one woman in a folding chair that's like, name and number. Yeah. It's like, how do you, where's the package?
Right.
Like, in this big ass building.
Are you going to get it?
Why is it here?
Where do you
like,
think it
could
is?
Could it not have just gone to like, I don't know, my local post office or something?
Right.
Could you not have just tried again the next day?
Like an access point? Oh my God. There were like,
surely there's better places to leave the package.
There were straight up like 2 years where I was in like a genuine feud war with UPS because they refused to deliver to my apartment. And every day I would come home to I didn't even order anything. I would just come home to a package, a slip being like, "Hey, we tried to deliver to you. We couldn't. Sorry." The amount of times that I went to the UPS depot on like the west side of New York by like the West Side Highway, but it's like where the West Side Highway stops. Like you didn't even know that it could stop, but it does. And it's like massive warehouses. And you have to walk down like block after block after block to like turn into the tiny little vestibule where there's some guy and he's just like, "I'm sorry about your package."
No, it's like, it's a worse place than the DMV because you're scared
so
the whole
much
time.
Worse. No, there's
like,
fear.
Like,
there's
if the DMV was a horror movie, that's what these package depots are.
It feels like, I've never seen back rooms, but I can only imagine it's
what
back rooms
feels
like.
Totally. It's like when my Uber, like, drops me off. He's like, "Are you sure you're supposed to be here?"
Like, it's like the Uber guy's scared for you.
Yeah, he's like, "Do you want me to wait here? Well, where are you going?" I'm like, "I don't fucking know either."
Yeah. He's like, "Should I come in with you?"
I'm like, "You wanna?"
Yeah.
Adventure.
Come on, let's go.
Me and my Uber driver. Oh my God.
So suffice to say, Girls is a great show. I'm glad
Girls
you're watching
is a
it.
Perfect show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm so excited to finish it and see what I feel.
Curious
after
how
watching
you feel
all
about
six.
The ending. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see.
TBD.
Okay.
Today's episode is brought to you by Vinted. I feel like I am in a constant state of trying to clean out my wardrobe and make space in my apartment. These New York closets are no joke. You've really got to be choosy about what clothes you're bringing in and what pieces have got to go. And Vinted really came into my life at the exact right time because Vinted is a secondhand app that makes it easy for everyday sellers, people like you and me, to sell pre-loved fashion and earn some extra money in the process. When I'm cleaning out my closet, whether it's because an item doesn't quite fit me right anymore or it's just not my style, I always feel better about moving on knowing that my pre-loved clothes are going to be loved again by someone else. My own personal rule is that if a full year, all four seasons pass me by and I don't go to reach for an item of clothing, it's going on Vinted. It's super easy to list your clothes and there's absolutely no selling fees, so you keep everything that you earn. It feels so good to have a less cluttered closet and successfully close my drawers without shoving things in, crossing my fingers, and just hoping that they fit. And Vinted is free to download. So not only are there no seller fees and you get to keep everything that you earn, but the app is completely free to download. It's so simple. Once an item sells, Vinted creates the prepaid shipping label for you. You literally have no excuse not to sign up and start listing your pre-loved items on Vinted today. See what's hiding in your closet. You might be surprised how much you can earn with Vinted. Download the Vinted app for free to start listing with no seller fees. My truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope, and you guys know I love a spicy read, but what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot, literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay? You're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight. But then, boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak at the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com. Switching gears here.
Let's beep over to the new gear.
We do have a little bit of a fun announcement.
I'm really excited for this one, you guys.
So, word on the street is there's going to be two Lover Girls trips next summer.
Two, count them, two. Ooh. Trips. And why would that be?
Because this year we're doing one trip to Greece and one to Italy. And would you believe it? But Miss Meg Ruoco's coming with me for the Italy trip.
Yeah.
Woo! So if you've been seeing, this will be the, I believe, the sixth and seventh trips. Wow. That we've done. So it's been, listen, we've been doing these for a while now. They're always the highlight of my entire summer. If you're new here and don't know what these trips are, I like to think of them as kind of like an on-the-go summer camp for lover girls. We've been to Italy. We've been to Greece twice. We've been to Spain. We've been to Croatia. And we're keeping these good vibes going next year by going back to Italy and back to Greece, this time in new spots. This time we're stopping in Corfu, Greece, and Sardinia, Italy. So who's invited? Literally anyone listening to this right now. I'd say most of the time the travelers on these trips range from like 24 to 35, but we've had people both older and younger join us as well. Literally, if you want to spend a week making new, like-minded friends while exploring a beautiful country together, you're invited and you're gonna love it. Most people come alone and everyone leaves with friends for life. It's my mission and complete focus on these trips to make sure that everyone feels included and that everyone has ample amounts of time for connection, heart to hearts, and so many giggles. When is it happening? These trips are happening in May of 2027. Historically, these trips have happened in June, but this year I'm moving them to May to help keep prices down in the usual range because summer travel is getting a little pricey, okay? For Greece, we're going to be going from May 3rd to May 9th. And for Italy, we'll be going from May 17th to May 23rd. And the vibes of each trip are going to be in some ways similar and in some ways different. Obviously, both of them will include all the same community building activities and workshops, but Greece is going to be more art and relaxation focused, and Italy is going to be more exploration and culture focused. For the Greece trip, we'll be staying at one resort on Corfu for the full week. It's going to be a very nice, luxurious kind of stay. We have a boat day planned. We'll be doing a botithis ceremony, I think that's how you pronounce it, where we'll be painting pots to then shatter and bring in renewal. Oh, kind of so much fun. We also have a wine tasting planned, and I will be adding in an art workshop that I will lead where we can create and collaborate together. And for the Italy trip, which Meg will be joining me on, we're going to be making two stops on Sardinia. We'll also have a boat day and a wine tasting there. And we'll be doing a classic Sardinian cooking class. We'll have plenty of spare time on both trips, and you can use that for some solo recharge time, or you can spend it continuing to socialize and connect with other travelers.
on these trips, I am in a constant state of putting opportunities for connection and various plans that are happening during the free periods in our group chat. So trust that you will always have recommendations on what to do and who to join, but ultimately you decide what to do in your free time. But really the vibe of these trips is about making friendships and building community. So trust that 99% of the time, people are hanging out together, but take those breaks when you need them. All of the details about these trips are located on the main trip pages on TrovaTrip, which I'm going to link in the episode description down below. Please take your time to look through the pages thoroughly, what's included in the price and what isn't, so that you can make an informed choice on joining. Historically, these trips have sold out within the first 20 minutes of being live, so be sure to put yourself on the email list, which is linked on each of the Trova pages, so that you're notified the second that each trip goes live. The Italy trip will launch at 12 p.m. Eastern on August 21st, which is 1 week from the day this episode is going live, and Greece is going to launch at 12 p.m. Eastern on the 24th, which is the Monday after. When it launches, you just have to make a down payment to secure your spot. Again, all of this information is on the main trip page. If you don't snag one of the initial spots, be sure to add yourself to the waitlist, because every year we do end up having cancellations and people do come off the waitlist. A lot of information here, but I'm going to be doing a Q&A over on my Instagram in a few days. So if you have questions and want more information that you can't find on the Trova pages, be sure to go follow me on there. And I'll also be posting the responses on the community tab of the Emotionally Online YouTube account as well. One last thing. If you want early access, my top tier Lover Girls HQ patrons get access to the bookings an hour before launch. I have no way of knowing how many people will take advantage of that perk or if it will sell out based on the patrons alone. I will tell you that last year, patrons got about half the spots. It didn't sell out in the Patreon presale, but they did take up a lot of those spots. Again, I have no way of knowing what it will be like this year, but if you want to extra secure your spot on the trip, join Lover Girls HQ on Patreon as a top tier patron. So stay tuned for that. And hopefully we'll see you next summer.
Can't wait.
Hey, yo.
Benny.
Shall we do a little audience submission?
Let's do it.
All right. Hi, Maddie and Meg. Been loving the show for a few years now and also so thrilled to see Meg in more episodes. Woo-hoo. You are both a highlight of my week. Aww. I was curious about both of your perspectives on self-talk after you each make mistakes. I don't mean regarding big, ginormous scandals, but I was wondering how you coach yourselves through smaller mishaps like social faux pas and misunderstandings. As someone who wants to be empathetic, I don't set out to intentionally hurt anyone's feelings or be rude / insensitive purposefully. But of course, we are human and sometimes misspeak. Occasionally, a joke doesn't land, a tone doesn't come through correctly, etc. It happens sometimes. However, even though I know I can't ever expect perfection of myself, and I do aim to clarify and apologize where I can, I notice that I have such a hard time exiting the negative self-talk spiral after making small mistakes like this. I know judging myself or thinking of myself unkindly after having slip-ups isn't helping me or the other person, so I want to figure out how to be gentler and process it. I also wonder if in some ways being angry at myself for an extended period of time is robbing myself of opportunities for friends to trust my intentions and vice versa. If I remain in the habit of thinking the worst of myself when I slip up, I don't want to normalize jumping to those same mean conclusions about other people when they are making honest mistakes or genuinely had no ill will. I feel like I create such a judgmental environment for myself in my head, and mistakes that lead to awkwardness or embarrassment are big triggers for that. When you slip up, what are things you each say to yourself or aim to understand about yourself so that you can get past harsh or unproductive feelings in these situations and move on to improvement without judgment? How long do you allow yourself to hold on to those kinds of emotions before putting them down and moving forward? How did you first learn to forgive yourself and lose the big fears of being misunderstood or having the worst possible conclusion drawn about yourself? Can I just say, I've thought about this so often in my life. Growing up, and you could ask Ashley and she'll tell you this, growing up, I always used to... I cannot talk today. growing up, I always used to say that being misunderstood was my biggest fear. Mm. And honestly, I think I probably, there might even be episodes of this podcast where I've said that. I think it's only been very recently in my life that that has changed. And I think that's because for so much of my life, I reacted just like this, where when I misspoke or a joke of mine didn't land or people perceived me in a way that I wasn't intending, it would ruin my week. Mm. I would think about it nonstop. I'd feel so guilty about it. I'd like fear that other people thought that I was an irredeemable bad person because I made a mistake. And I would constantly go through these like thought spirals where I'd be like, okay, what if I secretly am a bad person and none of the people close to me in my life are like brave enough to tell me? This is why I think I have OCD, because for so long that was like the thought spiral for me.
Yeah,
where I would be like, somebody would misunderstand me and I would process that misunderstanding by being like, oh my God, what if I really am the worst person ever?
Right.
And this mistake is actually an indication of a deeper truth about myself that no one in my life will tell me.
Yeah.
And what if this person that's misunderstood me is actually right about me?
Yeah.
And what if I'm wrong about myself? And I would start like really going into the weeds about it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, honestly, in part, it feels like something that I've shed with age. Mm-hmm. But also, I think it's something that I've shed under constant exposure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like I've, being online, I feel like I have like a hyper exposure to this in like how often I have been misunderstood, that it almost like forced me to fast forward through getting to the other side of that and figuring out how to deal with people not understanding me or perceiving me incorrectly, having an opinion about me that isn't true, assuming the worst of me, etc., etc. There's like an infinite number of examples that I could pull of my time on the internet and people misunderstanding me. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel like as time has gone on and I've gotten older and my own sense of self has become stronger, it's much harder for anybody to make me doubt my own perspective and like my own opinions or moral compass or whatever. And I also have a much easier time on like acknowledging or understanding how it is that somebody could have misunderstood me without being like, oh, and I'm the worst person ever because I could have said this sentence in this way instead of that way. And if only I had added this anecdote or this story, or I swished exactly what I said in this way, kind of what I was talking about earlier in this episode.
Yeah.
I feel like that's always something that I've been chasing and like wishing I cared less about massaging my words. And I do think that, yeah, it is just sort of with age and as time has gone on, I've cared less and less about these things because I trust who I am and I trust my perspective and I trust my own intentions. And I don't need every other person on the earth to validate who I am in order to know that it's the truth.
Yeah.
You're allowed to misunderstand me. You're allowed to be wrong about me. You're allowed to hear me make a bad joke and decide I'm a bad person because of it.
Yeah.
That's okay. You can think that because I'm the one who lives with me every single day of my life. Mm-hmm. And I understand what my intentions are and what kind of person I am. And I know that I'm always moving through life with my best foot forward. And sometimes I still do. I think particularly when I meet new people, I have a lot of social anxiety. So I feel like sometimes when I meet new people, and I'm trying to get to know someone or just like be friendly and make a joke, I often will leave that interaction being like, was I the fucking most annoying person on the face of the planet? Right. Like, are we going to be friends or was I just fucking so annoying?
Right.
Who knows?
And who's to say?
And so sometimes I'll still have moments where I worry that I didn't speak or represent myself perfectly. Mm-hmm. But I think that people are smarter than you think they are. And that we should give other people more credit when it comes to being able to sit with the like imperfect experience of being alive.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, if somebody else makes a joke that doesn't land or is a little weird, I don't think inside my head, God, they must be a horrible, annoying, weird person, and I never want to talk to them again.
Right.
In fact, I don't even think about it at all.
No.
If someone has a joke that doesn't hit, well, usually I'm the type of person who's laughing at everything because I don't like it when anybody bombs in front of me. But when I notice that somebody is, you know, a little bit anxious or socially nervous or fumbling with their words or whatever, my thought is not like, oh, they're so weird, they fucked up this interaction. It's almost like a relief to me, yeah, honestly, because I'm like, oh, me too.
Yeah. Same.
Me too. Been there, doing that inside my brain, yeah, right now. Like, totally. I think that most people are concerned on some level about coming across well,
yeah,
and like representing themselves accurately, being understood. That's like a very normal human thing.
Yes.
And because we all share that, we all are more understanding of other people's experiences with that than you would think.
Yep.
People are always judging you less than you are judging yourself.
Completely.
But I get it, because I have been harder on myself in the past. Sometimes I'm still hard on myself now, but I have noticed it changing a lot, and maybe it's the Lexapro. I gotta be honest, it might be the Lexapro.
That could be part of it.
So you know what? I don't, who knows what it is?
We're not saying that that's what you should do.
Listen, life is imperfect.
It's
sometimes
just,
we just, it's age, it's experience, yeah, it's Lexapro, it's everything.
It's everything between. I don't know. Anyway.
Just trying things
I'm
out.
I'm just trying things out. That's an example of me saying the wrong thing and then being like, I'm just trying stuff.
No, I loved it.
Thank you so much. I completely agree with everything you've said. I think for me personally, me being hard on myself and me being really judgmental of myself was a symptom, not the like actual illness that I had. Like, that was a symptom of my like debilitating insecurity that I had growing up, was being really afraid and fearful of saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing, and not being liked. That was like a really big issue for me, was not coming across as like affable or like a kind of you know, a totally fine person to be around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never wanted to be anything other than a totally fine person to be around. Yeah. And so, which is hard when, you know, at my core, what I am is loud and probably annoying a lot of the time, you know? So, but like when I was younger, that was something that I tried to kind of spin into this thing of, again, being jokey but not too jokey, of being chummy with people but not being overly familiar, walking this kind of constant fine line of again, Meg just being fine to be. No one's gonna be mad if they were partnered with me in, you know, some sort of group project. Everyone's gonna be like, that's just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was a result of my like deep, deep, deep insecurity. And so me being less judgmental about myself went away with the more work that I did to get to the root of like what those insecurities were and are.
Yeah.
The irony of ironies being that I do feel that a lot of my relationships are so much better now,
mm-hmm,
that I am not constantly censoring myself.
Yep.
And, you know, feeling that I have to hide these like, you know, vulnerable or rougher parts of myself with people or with my friends. And that people do tend to gravitate towards me more than they did in the past. Social anxiety is definitely something that I have. I have a lot of like tricks to mask it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, you know, if you meet me at a party, you're not going to walk away being like, that person was nervous or anything like that. That's not necessarily how I come across when I'm in big social gatherings like that. That said, yeah, I've overthought. I've overthought a lot.
Totally.
A lot of interactions. A lot of... an example is literally last week, I had a conversation with someone who I know but don't know that well. And I know him primarily from like the improv comedy scene. And he just asked me how my weekend had went. And all I said was like, yeah... it was a lot of work with my co-host. I have a podcast. I don't. And he's like, oh, that's great. And I was like, yeah, it's doing well. I don't know. Like, that was all I said.
But to be honest with you, like, sometimes when people ask like a very open-ended question right. like that, it is hard to land hard. On your feet.
I was tired. It was like 11 totally. p.m. on a Sunday. I had nothing. And then I walked away and I was like, was I just like being a weird asshole being like, no. Yeah, I have a podcast and it's doing well and I'm happy. Like I was like, ugh. And I texted my other friend about it being like, I think I just had the worst conversation ever like with with this guy. And at this point, it's like, I think when I make mistakes, all I can kind of do is just like cringe and then like laugh about it and right. then keep it pushing. Because it's like nobody gives a fuck. And even if it is something that like they're like, oh yeah, remember when you did that silly thing?
Yeah.
No one's like meeting it with the kind of like harshness that you're right. meeting it with yourself. And yeah, I think that for me, Cymbalta has been major as well. So mm-hmm. it's a myriad of things. Let's add Cymbalta totally. to the list as well. But I think, yeah, I think that the negative self-talk, for me anyway, was much more a symptom of my kind of overarching like insecurity and doubt I had mm-hmm. in myself as a person.
Yeah.
And so leaning into and celebrating those versions of myself more and intentionally doing that and also intentionally stopping those negative self-talk thoughts as they came up, that is what helped change things yeah. for me. Because trust me, I know how it feels to spiral about a situation that that you didn't nail.
Totally.
Been there.
Yeah, I spiraled about a social situation I bombed a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
It happens.
It happens. It happens. We're only human.
And I know for a fact that the other people did not think twice about what I was spiraling about.
Yeah.
I talked about this on the Patreon last week, actually. So if you want to know the story, go listen.
So, okay, listen to that.
But
yeah, it's like these things happen and we really can't. There isn't enough time to worry about all of that stuff.
Also, sometimes to me, it's like, I just have to take it as a learning.
Yeah.
You just have to be like, and that was the trial run. And yep. now I know the next time somebody asks me that question to not answer it the way I just did.
Yeah. The next time somebody asks me, how was your weekend? If I spend it working with Maddie, I can just say I was hanging out with friends. Right.
I did a podcast and it was awesome and so much fun.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. How was your weekend?
Yeah, exactly.
Here's what I will say. This is something that I have done. Here's like a little tip for you. I whenever I feel the kind of like social anxiety coming on, I will just always shove it off of me and onto somebody else by asking them a bunch of questions about themselves.
Yeah.
People love to talk about themselves. So if you feel like you've just made some sort of social faux pas, in my mind, what happens to me is I'm like, bail. And then I just go, so how are you doing about the latest thing that I remember about you? Like that's, yeah. I will just.
Totally. I love asking people about whatever I recently saw on their Instagram stories.
Totally.
But you know what? Where I struggle is when people aren't on Instagram or don't post a lot on Instagram stories. So I'm like, fuck.
So what have they
what
done?
What have you been up to? Like that's doing? When I just have to ask a vague question. Yeah. Of like, what are you up to? Because I'm like, I really don't know, queen.
Yeah. And never underestimate the power of like a cliche question. Like,
yeah.
Got any travel coming up?
Totally.
What's a fun piece of gossip you've heard lately?
Pop
like,
culture, that's a fun one. Movies pop that have come out, music. What's your album of the summer?
Have you seen Obsession? Yeah. This is what I heard about it.
Totally.
I saw The Odyssey. I could only see it in 70mm and not IMAX. Yeah. You know, like
y'all excited for Real Housewives of Salt Lake City to come back?
Exactly. That really helps because a lot of times people just want to talk about themselves. And the more that you can put that on them, maybe it is a manipulation tactic what I'm doing, but I do. But I do find it to be.
But hey,
very helpful. I find it to be helpful.
I also feel like this is, I mean, you're making me realize this right now. This is the episode of realizing things. Mm-hmm. Episode 169, famously the episode of realizing things.
Many are saying.
I think that recently on this show, over the last like 6 months, there have been multiple episodes where I've been like, I love bitches. I think everyone should be bitchier.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's a symptom of me appreciating people that don't think twice and also embracing that you are supposed to be disliked by some people.
So true.
Everyone be bitchier. Embrace that you are supposed to be disliked by some people.
Yeah.
Some people will not get you.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will think that you're a doofus and that your delivery is bad and that you are too negative.
Yeah.
People say that about me.
Yeah.
They hear passion and they go, "Ugh, she's so negative."
Yeah.
Okay, fine, bitch.
My roommate dated a girl a few years ago who didn't think that I was funny.
How's it feel to be wrong?
And you know what? I just had to accept at some point that she and I lived in different worlds.
Taste is genetic.
Taste is genetic.
Blame your mother. I've always said it.
And what am I going to do about that?
Also, like, there's plenty of people in the world that I actually don't wish to relate to. So I'm actually happy that lots of people don't relate to me or understand me.
This is the thing, is like a lot of times I find that the people who don't fuck with me, I don't fuck with in return.
Truly, most of the time it is reciprocal.
It's very
actually truly, I can't give you one example of a time where a bitch I loved hated me.
That's my thing. I'm like, is there a world where like there's someone who's like favor I'm trying to earn and they just don't fuck with my vibe at all? I don't think so.
I can't think of one person.
Yeah.
Anybody who I don't fuck with also doesn't fuck with me and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Completely.
So. That's Emotionally Online, everybody.
Yeah.
Episode 169.
The episode of realizing things.
169s.
Nice.
Because when you do that, you realize it was never worth it.
Whoa. I want to get that tattooed on my body.
69ing? Never worth it. We recently did the 69th episode of The Post Show, and I said exactly that.
It takes a lot of logistics.
And, like, why am I expected to do labor while I'm experiencing pleasure?
Yeah.
This is my time to chill and relax.
And no one is getting the best of either thing that's happening.
Let me enjoy me and then you enjoy you separately after the fact.
Right. We're each blowing each other at like 40 to 60% at any given time.
69 is like this is what productivity culture has done to orgasms is the 69.
Nobody enjoys like slow sex anymore. Everybody's trying
to... We gotta do 2-for-1?
Everybody's trying to optimize sex these days.
I take my turn, then you take yours.
Yeah. Let's take our time with it, why don't we?
But sometimes it takes 169s to realize that.
There could be 169s in a room.
Thanks for listening, you guys. As a reminder, the Trova trip information is going to be linked below. Ooh. And if you want even more information, we're going to do a little Q&A over on Instagram in a couple days. So be sure to follow us on there.
Yeah.
You can follow the show at Emotionally Online Pod. You can follow me at Maddie Drosbeck.
You can follow me at Meg Rocco.
And we will see you guys in next week's episode.
Bye.